Ron and Anian. Inspected a car this week that had three bald tires and a brake light that was out. Car doctor. And the answer I got from the customer, and the answer was, well, I don't need the tires right now. I'll wait until the snow comes. And I'm looking at the calendar going, it's September. Okay.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, the car doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
Hey, it's time to start your engines. Hello and welcome. Ron and Amy and the Car Doctor here at 855-560-9900. Thanks for taking the time to stop by and join us in the garage this weekend once again. And more information out at cardoctorshow.com. Check out our Facebook page. And don't forget to podcast us if you're not listening to the live broadcast. And click subscribe or favorite, however you might do it. And keep driving the numbers via cardoctorshow.com or spreaker.com. I'm not going to waste any time. Which one first, boys? One. Let's go to one. Let's go to Jerry in New Jersey, 04 Jeep Grand Cherokee, and let's get it rolling because we got a busy hour coming up. Jerry, what can I do for you?
Hey, Ron. Thanks for taking my call. I love your show.
Thank you, sir.
I have the driver's side. It's an 04 Overland, and the driver's side rearview mirror has a heated mirror, and what's happening is the mirror is fogging up like it's burning. It actually looks like toasty right where the sign is for, like, you know, heated mirrors.
Right.
And I was wondering if there's a short in the system.
Sounds like there's a short in the mirror. So I mean, let's do this. Can you, you know, I mean, this is just a bit, this is current and voltage. All right, that's all it is. It sounds to me like you're describing, like, the mirror is actually starting to burn through in that spot on the glass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, it's resistance is changing and current's got to be going up or down. If we wanted to troubleshoot this, well, the easiest way, I wonder if the connectors are the same side to side. If you swap mirrors left to right, right to left, and if the problem happened over on the right side, then you know it's not the controls, the harness, it's in the mirror itself. Put a mirror on it. If the connectors aren't the same, and I'm sure you can look at a wiring diagram and figure it out and put some jumper wires in there and check it. But then at the same time, when you did some jumper wires, if you had an inductive amp probe, why don't you measure current draw on the left side versus the right and see what you got. But it sort of sounds like you've got a bad mirror assembly from my seat here. All right? Because that is a self-contained unit. There's no, I believe there's no repairable parts. I'll put it to you this way. It's an 04, so it's 14 going on 15 years old. By the time you got that mirror apart with all little plastic clips, you're gonna break most of it and have to replace the whole thing anyway.
Right.
So, all right. Okay. And I would check out the price of a replacement mirror before I did anything, because you may find that it's expensive enough that you might just be unplugging it and be grateful you have a mirror at this point in the game, because that mirror could be $400 or $500.
Okay. Wow. All right.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Walter in Hawaii. Gee, it must be 4 or 5 weeks. What's going on, Walt? What can I do for you?
Hey, Ron. Aloha.
Aloha.
On my Corvette, 95 Corvette, the pass key system, or the VAT system, I guess GM calls it, I want to bypass it. And I know that the key, I ohmed out the key at 4740 ohms.
Right.
And I'm wondering, now I know on, there's no more Radio Shack, but on Amazon I was able to get some resistors. Could you tell me exactly where I put those?
Well, I could, but everybody else has to promise me they're going to turn off their radios because I'm giving away state secrets.
I said that ahead of time because I don't want you giving out any information that people could steal cars.
So,
Maui, because they're not going to take them.
You know, let me ask you that. If they stole a car on Maui, Walt, where would they take it? It would have to be like an amphibious car or something. I mean, you know.
Exactly.
So.
And you can't even get them on a barge without full documentation of ownership and everything, because I had one shipped here. So.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Car thieves don't have a very big business here.
Yeah, I got to think so. It's like it's a captured market.
If they steal your car, they call you up and ask you for the manual on the radio.
Right. So, yeah, it's they're polite about it.
There should be a
VATS or a passkey 2 system, I think, is what you're describing to me. The key has a little black chip in it, and you measured resistance on both sides of the chip.
There's 15 possible choices, and I look mine up, and it's number 10.
So at the base of the steering column, you'll find the two white wires come out of the lock cylinder, and they run down the length of the column, and then they branch, and they jump into a connector. It should be at the base of the column, and then it'll go to the right, and it goes over to, I believe, the BCM or the PATS module. I can't remember what they had in 95, but basically, if you can pick up those two white wires I believe they were color-coded white, and then they turned into two different colors when they came out of the base of the steering column. If you could pick up those two white wires somewhere in the vehicle and just put the resistor across it, that's all it is. It's just got to see that resistance value, and it'll just, you know, put you in automatic bypass. Now, there are also some kits out online. I have seen this. And this is my argument against all the computerization, right? Here's a vehicle that's 23, 24 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I realize it's a vet, but who really wants to steal it? It's not that it's a bad car, but you can't get parts for it. You know,
I'm gonna go steal a vet. There's some ZR1s out there.
Right. There's a lot. You know, they're all newer, faster, shinier, etc.
Yeah.
So there are. If you Google search bypass GM passkey 2 or GM passkey, there are some companies out there. I've seen wiring harness jumper kits, and they'll tell you location and. It's been a long time since I've researched this, but I do recall seeing this a good 4 or 5 years ago because it was a big deal. What if it's a bad PATS module, right? The actual anti-theft module itself, and you can't get one. What are you supposed to do? Junk the car?
I guess.
Yeah, and so that's why
the VAT system is really outdated.
Right. So I think
Briggs and Stratton made it, as a matter of fact.
Well, you know, I think if somebody really wants the car today. It's called the back. Think about how many times you go out to dinner, how many times you come out of the restaurant and there's a flatbed picking up a car. Do you ever really wonder, is that really his car?
Not your car on the flatbed.
Or is somebody just putting the car up on the flatbed and saying, bye-bye. I picked up a new Chevy today, a 2019 Silverado, and during the pre-flight instruction at the dealership, they showed me how when I call OnStar and say, somebody just took my truck, within 3 minutes, OnStar has the vehicle on track, and they've put it in reduced power mode. They actually slow the vehicle down 10 miles at a time per hour at a clip or something, so with the police chasing it, they can actually catch up to it and catch the guy. I was like, that's it. We just put car thieves out of business. I mean,
that's totally cool. That is totally cool.
And then they've got vehicle locator. You know, I can go vehicle locator. I can log into mychevrolet.com, and, you know, where's my truck? Boom, boom, boom. Okay, there it is. It's nuts. It's so.
Yeah, how do you fix any of that stuff?
You buy a new one. Aren't you listening? So every 10 years, you just go down to the store.
Question?
Go ahead, real quick.
Okay, real quick. I sent you an email on this, but you probably didn't get it. Trying to start a Cummins diesel. Did the electrical work. After you've done that, you know, the battery, all that sort of stuff. Where do you go from there on a diesel?
That it doesn't start?
Yeah. No crank, no start. Yeah. No crank, no start.
You turn the key and the starter doesn't engage.
Let me rephrase that. All that worked. I replaced the relay. But I'm just curious if that hadn't worked, where I would have gone from there.
If it's a no crank condition?
Yeah. And I found the problem, but I'm just curious, that had not been the problem, where I would have gone from there on a diesel.
If you had an electric start on your motorcycle, and you had an electric start on your car, regardless of whether it was diesel or gas, where's the first place you'd look?
Fuel.
I'd look at the starter if it doesn't crank. You're saying...
I'm probably not being clear. I got that fixed.
Okay.
But in my mind, I didn't know where I would go if the electrical part didn't fix it. Where would I have gone for, you know, fuel and compression?
Well, compression, we really don't worry about. I would listen to see how it's cranking. I would, you know, does it crank even? Fuel is always a big problem on diesel, and if we're dealing with what ifs, I always take a fuel sample. I'll put it to you this way. But a no start, a no crank, you turn the key and you get dash lights and nothing happens. No sound from the engine compartment, Walter? You're chasing the starter circuit. How does that starter engage? What engages that starter? It's got a crank, whether it's gas or diesel. After that,
I went right to the clutch switch, and then I followed it to the relay, and the relay was bad.
Okay. I mean, after that, if it's a crank, no start condition on a diesel, I always look at fuel quality first. I pull a sample. I'll actually check cetane rating in some vehicles, like octane. You know, does it have enough oomph to kick? And then, you know, we can kind of start talking mechanical stuff from there and pumps and, you know, things like that. All right?
Yeah. Okay, thanks a lot, Ron.
You're very welcome, Walter. You take good care. Enjoy Hawaii today. 855-560-9900. The Car Doctor's coming back right after this.
Write it on the wall so you don't forget to call for car advice done right. 855-560-9900. Now, back to Ron.
Let's get over to Wayne in Maine. I like the way we did that. I want to talk about right to repair. Wayne, you're on with the Car Doctor. How can I help?
Well, actually, it's about the Moss-Magnuson Act.
Okay.
You had mentioned this. I heard it from last week about John Deere.
Yeah, John Deere and the tractors and the right to repair, the way they're limiting the farmers.
Right. Well, that too. How can they limit them when there's a law that says they can't?
Well,
except for warranty work.
Right. The issue becomes they're making it so tough to access information. So the way it works in auto repair, I'll speak from this. They haven't limited what I have access to. It just costs me X amount of dollars. So as a business owner, I've made a decision that the five main car lines that I see on a more frequent basis, Toyota, Honda, Ford, GM, Chrysler, all right, those are the top five. They make approximately 80-85% of my customer base. And, you know, subsequently Honda, Acura, Toyota, Lexus, Chrysler, Jeep, they're all within that they become the vehicles I'm working on. If I want to go out and buy information for Nissan, if I want to go out and buy information for some of the other vehicles out there, it's going to cost me more, and that's what right to repair ensures, but it also, because of all this, limits in a sense. So that's part of the problem. Can the John Deere tractor repair guy in the middle of Iowa afford to service all year generations of John Deere tractor for his farmer that's 200 acres in the middle of a field? It becomes a cost issue. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. But also, too, what about the loggers?
Right. Well, yeah, and all of this. And, you know, all this technology, it's slowly pointing us to the point that in the direction of, you know, how can we overcome the cost? We're all guilty of it. You go out to restaurants today, everybody's got their hand down and their thumb going, right? I think they're going to start handing out thumb casts, sprained thumbs, that people are going to be, you know, spraining their thumbs, texting and everything else. You know, we're all guilty of it. We're all calling on this technology and demanding more of it. And it's just slowly going to erode our ability to repair and effectively maintain whatever it is, whether we're a farmer, a logger, a trucker, you know, Harry homeowner, or a soccer mom. It doesn't matter. It's going to become an issue, and it already has. And that's what we have to be aware of, that they're mandating who and what can work on tractors, and that's what Right to Repair for Automobiles is preventing. I should point that out, that Right to Repair is a good thing, but it's not that it's an open market. As an independent repair shop, we have to pay for everything we get to repair that vehicle. Nothing is given to us for free in any large scale or quantity. So, all right, sir.
You are correct. I retired from the automotive industry. Had my own business for 37 years.
So, you know, you know from whence I came. It's getting tougher and tougher as time goes by. Wayne, I got to go. We're up against it, and I got one more to sneak in before the bottom. Thank you, sir. I appreciate your comments. Mike in Connecticut, 01 Camry, overheated.
Whew. Yes, sir.
Yes,
love
sir.
Your show.
Here's thank you,
what
sir.
I got, Ron.
What do you got?
I got a 2001 Toyota Camry, four-cylinder, okay? Changed the thermostat, and started to overheat. I had a leaking gasket, put a new gasket in from the dealer thermostat, put it in, still overheating. Now the radiator started to leak, but it wasn't leaking out of the thermostat. Fixed that problem, put a new radiator in there because the radiator was leaking. No leaks, pressure tested it, gets the operating temperature after the car warms up. You know, the idiot light goes, I mean, the idiot gauge goes about halfway on the dash,
right,
where it always has been. After 15, 20 minutes, it goes past the midway point, heading towards the red zone. So I stopped it at 3/4, shut it off. I got, it's either, what do you think? I think it's a head gasket.
Well, are the fans coming on, Mike?
Yeah, the fans are coming on.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
If fans are coming on and we're getting excessively hot, and we want to assume, which is a dangerous word on family radio or any other place, we want to assume that the thermostat is good, we've got one of two things. Either the water pump impeller is loose and spinning, which I've seen once in my career on a Toyota 4-banger.
I squeezed the hose, and it had plenty of suction.
Well, it had plenty
of
pressure.
You know what I'm saying?
Both hoses are equally hot?
Yeah.
Okay. If both hoses are equally hot, we got circulation, we've got temperature, we've got a thermostat that's open. Yeah, I'm inclined to think we've got a head gasket issue, even though it's not running rough. Is it running rough?
It
I didn't ask that question.
It was running rough when I first started it, but after it warms up, it gets right to 650 RPMs.
Okay, so do this. All right.
But it's about normal. It was rough at the beginning, but after it warms up, it gets fine.
You don't have a radiator pressure tester, do you?
No, I was thinking about pulling the plugs out and see if they're wet. That
I was going to say,
gasket, right?
If you could get a radiator pressure tester, pull the 4 plugs when it's cold, all right? Put a radiator pressure tester on it so you build some pressure in the system and walk away. You know, pump it up to whatever spec is on the cab, 14, 16 pounds,
right,
whatever the number
13,
is.
13,
and,
yep.
And let it sit. Come back the next morning, take a flashlight, look in the hall, hand crank the motor, look to see, is there any coolant in any of the cylinders? If there is, that's a head gasket, brother. And then at that point, you know, the conversation has to go to, is it worthwhile to fix? Do we want to put a head gasket in it? Or here's an opportunity to use K-Seal. All right, you hear me talk about K-Seal all the time. How many miles are on this car, Mike?
178.
All right, so,
I'm sorry, 184.
You got to figure a head gasket's going to be, you know, somewhere shy of 1,500 to 2 grand. On a 15-year-old car with 170-something thousand miles on it, go down to your local O'Reilly Auto Parts, get a bottle of K-Seal. You can go to kseal.com for more information. I, to date, have used it in better than a half a dozen vehicles. It's worked in every car. It doesn't create any heater core issues. I haven't had any negative effects. And we'll typically see those cars, they're running down the road a year and a half, 2 years later. I can't say it's a permanent forever, like a tattoo kind of a fix, but it'll get you a couple of years out of it. I've seen that as a very good result. And usually the reason I don't see it any longer is those cars are gone. The customers have replaced the vehicles because they've gotten their mileage out of it. At 170-something thousand plus more miles, you know, how many more miles are you looking to get out of it? Another 50, another 100, another 500,000?
Another 50.
Yeah.
But so what is it? You drain a system out of it, then you add antifreeze?
Right. Instructions are on the bottle. It's real easy to do. Cold engine, you know, drain some out, K-Seal in, let it do its magic. This stuff is the latest, greatest technology. I put it to the equivalent of all the head gasket sealers in the market. From my side, from where I'm sitting, from what I've seen prior to this, they've all been the Wright brothers in the biplane. This stuff is the space shuttle. All right, this stuff works really well. It's been around a long time. The real mechanics rave about it. The guys that are trying to book time, they don't like this because it loses the head gasket job, if you know what I'm saying. So for that vehicle that's, you know, you hear me talk about it, like we say, for that vehicle that's looking for repair without major money, K-Seal's the way to go, kseal.com. Let me know what happens, Mike. I'm Ron Anini, the Car Doctor. Hey, coming up next, Shannon Spake, Child Safety Prevention Week. Stay tuned. We'll be back right after this.
When the family car needs some fixing, there's only two things that really matter: getting the right part and getting some good advice. It's a pretty safe bet that with over 1 million parts in stock, Pep Boys has the right part right now. The Pep Boys pros are extensively trained to find the right part for just about any car or truck. Better yet, these pros can also handle the entire installation or service needed. It's always good to have options, and know the Pep Boys pros have it covered either way.
Hey, Ron and Amy, the car doctor, we are back. You know, just this week at the shop, I had a customer with a problem with a child car seat. And it was interesting to learn that child car seats today are one-time use. And I thought that since we are right around that time of year, Child Passenger Safety Week, I reached out to our friends at CarStar, and they hooked me up with Shannon Spake. Shannon is obviously a well-known reporter for Fox Sports, covering the NFL as well. But more importantly, and probably most importantly, she's a mom. And who better to talk to us about Child Passenger Safety Week than Shannon Spake? Shannon, welcome to the Car Doctor.
Thank you so much. Yeah, certainly the resume with the mom of twins who are just about to be 9 years old, and I have to admit they're still in booster seats at 9 years old. I know each state has different criteria that you have to meet in order to be in a booster seat, whether it be height, weight, age. But for me, the biggest thing is when I look back there, if I feel like the car and the seat belt is not where it needs to be, I mean, those boys are in booster seats because they're my most precious commodity that I carry around, and keeping them safe is my number one job.
You know, it's a sombering statistic, but car crashes, from what I read, are the leading cause of death for kids between the ages of 1 and 13. And is that related to how they're in the vehicle?
Can you believe that? Like, to me, personally, I couldn't even, it frightens me to think that something that I do inside the car or something that's out of my control outside of the car from someone else could completely change my life forever because of my children back there. You know, like I said, it is my job to keep them safe. So whatever I can do to keep them safe, whether it be, whatever it may be, but certainly one thing that I know that I can do, and you and I talked about it, whereas like when we were growing up, car seats weren't even a thing, but we know that these things keep our children safe, and that's something that I'm going to do. And I think the biggest thing is that people don't realize that if you are in a car crash, you know, anything above a minor car crash, your car seat could be affected and could be compromised, and you can't see it visibly, but it could essentially not be working the way that it's supposed to be. And so what we're trying to do, CarStar and EvenFlow, for this Child Passenger Safety Week, is to remind people and let them know that sometimes when you bring your car to the auto shop to get it fixed after a wreck, think about what's in the back seat of your car and what's keeping your kids safe, because sometimes those car seats can be compromised as well.
Yeah, you know, when I was raising my kids, when I was growing up, you know, car seats, if you had a car seat, it lasted forever. It did everything. It went from car to car,
yes.
Went from kid to kid. Now it's a one-time use thing. So if somebody's out there picking up, and, you know, can you comment on this? The concern becomes you're picking up a used car seat. There's a danger in that, isn't there?
Well, yeah, they say don't do that. They say that's a big no-no because you don't know the history, you know, of that car seat. It's just like your car when you go to buy it. You have the Carfax that tells you everything that's happened to your car. Well, those don't exist for the car seats. So they say never buy a used car seat because you just don't know where it's been or what it's been through. And again, once again, if you are in a car wreck, and the list, they're minor wrecks. They mentioned there's a list on the website that you can go to, the NHTSA, which is the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. CarStar, EvenFlow are really, they have this message out there this week. There's the list of things that tell you when and where your car seat might be okay. But I'm one of those people that when I look at my husband sometimes and I'll go, do you think this medicine is expired by a month? Do you think it's okay for the boys?
Yeah.
And if my husband says, I think it's okay, I think is not good enough for me because
right.
These are my children. And so
right.
If you think it's okay, these are your kids, it'd probably be best to kind of err on the side of safety.
Right. It's not oatmeal, it's medicine. We want to make sure that we're
exactly.
Safe. And for those of you just tuning in, we're talking to Shannon Spake from Fox Sports. She's also here on behalf of CarStar and EvenFlow, talking about Child Passenger Safety Week. Shannon, you know, statistics say that people are involved in a car accident once every 7 years. So you think about that car seat you find used online or in a garage sale. Like you said, you don't know the history, so you're really rolling the dice because there could be damage to that seat that you just don't see.
Yeah, and again, what we're letting people know this week is that if you have to go and repair some metal or something on your car, or if your airbags are deployed and you need to bring your car into a collision shop or into a car shop, like, that's a time to also kind of look back there. And I don't think it's something that people realize, because you can physically look at these car seats and you can go, oh, there's nothing wrong with it. But a lot of times, and most of the time, the damage is not visible to your eye. And so what we're trying to remind people and to let people know is something that I wasn't even aware of before I started working with CarStar and Evenflo on this initiative, is that, like, get a new car seat. Your car's in a wreck. You bring it into the shop. You get a new fender. You get a new light, or your airbags need to be put back in. Let's think about the things that are in the back that are also protecting our children.
Right. Just out of curiosity, does insurance cover, in the event of an accident, would insurance cover car seat replacement for the kids?
Some insurances do, actually, and that's another thing I did not know about. But some insurances do. So what we are recommending is that when you do bring a child into the world and you have a new member of your family, reach out to your car insurance and find out if that's something that they replace. Because if they do, how easy is that? You just go to the car insurance at the same time as you're getting your car repaired, and you get a new car seat.
It can be overwhelming, I guess, picking car seats today. Like anything else, technology just...
Well, but your parent, everything is overwhelming, right, Ron?
Right, yeah. it's just technology just, levels us. If you're a new parent or you're a grandparent, you're trying to buy something for the for your kids to give them for their kids, in the way of a car seat for the holidays coming up and things like that. Where can you go get more information? Is there a place?
Yeah, you could go to safekids.org, and these are also places that will help you install the car seats. I know you and I were talking about how complex some of these things are. I think actually they do like breastfeeding classes. They do diaper changing classes, and they do classes on how to install car seats nowadays for parents.
They are. I've got to tell you, it took me the better part of 10 minutes to unwrap this car seat out of the car. I actually took pictures with my cell phone, like the strap goes here and it comes down over the hook and it goes this way and then it clicks, because I knew when the mom, the mom had to leave the car. We had to work on it a couple of days and she had to put the seat into her mom's car. And I said, let me help her. I'll get the seat out of this and I'll put it in the other one. And holy cow, what a procedure.
She probably came in and did it in like 2 seconds, right?
That's the God's honest truth. She really, you just do zip, 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 and, it's like, if you want to understand how to use your Droid phone, you just get your kids to do it. It's the same thing. Get the mom to fix the car seat.
It can be overwhelming, especially for new parents, to figure out how to put car seats in. It's just one more thing. You're leaving the hospital. I remember leaving the hospital with the boys when they were first born, and literally the stories, you hear it. You're going 10 miles an hour down the highway because your most precious commodity is back there. And as they get older, we get more comfortable with them inside the cars. And so we have to be aware when something they're sitting in has been compromised, and there could be an issue with that. And I think this is, I think this for any parent, this is such a great wake-up call to go, wow, I didn't even know that that's something I had to do, because it certainly has been for me.
And at the very least, when we think of car seat, it's not just, do I replace it after the accident? How about this week we all go back there and tug on the straps? Is everything routed correctly? Are we connected? Is it tight? If you find that you're putting the child in the seat, it kind of wiggles around a little bit. Something's loosening
not
up.
Good.
Not good. It's got to be ready. So listen, Shannon, I appreciate you taking the time with us today. Where can the listeners go for more information?
Again, so CarStar and Evenflo have teamed up to push this message and to let people know about this awareness. So you could check out their websites, because they certainly have links to all of the places that you need to go. But safekids.org is one place, and then the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, which
Perfect.
Is NHTSA. They have all of the guidelines and all of the criteria. Again, they'll also help you for new parents or older parents or grandparents who need to know how to put in the car seats properly. But I think the most important thing is be aware when these things may need to be changed. And in the event of an accident, they do.
Okay. Hey, listen, Shannon, we appreciate you being here today and spreading the word. We're going to do our part for you. And thanks, by the way, you're doing a great job up there on Fox Sports. We enjoy watching you.
Thanks, Ron. I appreciate that.
You're very welcome. You take good care, and we'll talk to you again real soon. I'm Ron Anini, the Car Doctor. We are back. We're right after this. Don't go away.
For the best in car advice, give Ron a call. 855-560-9900. Now, back to Ron.
And once again, thanks to Shannon Spake for taking the time to talk to us about Child Care Safety Week. And the car seat thing is big, and we've got to be aware of it. I did not realize that car seats are a one-time use only option. So, I learn something every week, and it's not necessarily just about the mechanical side of cars. Let's go and talk to Al. Al, welcome back. Where do we stand with this car, this Malibu of yours that hasn't started?
I had a bad connection. I didn't hear all of what you said. I'm sorry.
This is Al from Maine with the Malibu that doesn't start. I did see your scope pictures, Al.
Mm-hmm.
And they looks like the crank sensor's working. It's hard for me to see. It was hard for me to see in the pictures exact scope settings, and that's a true lab scope that you're using, not necessarily an automotive scope. So it wasn't exactly what I was expecting. I was expecting cam and crank laying over the top of each other and to show the index marks of where the timing cycle is to make sure that everything is lined up and timed correctly. The other thing I wanted to mention was I've been thinking about this car. This car has cranking RPM on a scan tool, correct?
Yes.
And the injectors, did you ever listen to the injectors to see if they're clicking?
Yep.
They are.
Yeah, matter of fact, it floods the plugs.
Right. So, you know, to me, this car's got a good crank signal. It's you know, whether or not cam signal's working.
Yeah, it is. We did a scope test on that as well.
So we've got crank, we've got cam.
Got a consistent pattern out of it.
And we've got injector pulse. Do we have spark?
Yep. Now, that's a little bit bewildering. I got the bright idea to put a timing light on it.
That's
I made the mark on the crank just to see if it would light in the correct place.
Right.
It won't light a timing light. However, when you pull the wire off the plug, you can put a screwdriver in there and you can make a blue spark jump half an inch. It seems to have a good strong spark. Have another customer with an identical engine put timing light on it, flash like crazy. But for some reason, this one won't flash a timing light.
Well, you know, I'm trying to be accurate in the test. Can we spend $20 and get a spark plug tester with a little alligator clip on it, rated for the system?
Yep.
You know, and just or at the very least, can we? You know, the local auto parts store will have it. One of those black plastic with the graduated.
Well, I've got one of those, but like I say, if you put a screwdriver in and hold the ground, it'll jump a blue spark half an inch.
It's got plenty of spark. So if it's got fuel, it's got spark. Either we've got restricted exhaust, or we've got a compression issue, or something mechanical in the way the engine is timed.
150 pounds compression each cylinder.
All right. Then we've got...
And timing is perfect. I've had the cover off.
Then you're missing something, Al, because in my mind...
I know.
If you've got spark, you've got fuel, you've got the engine mechanically timed, have you tried lowering the exhaust to see if it starts?
That's what I'm going to try next. You mentioned that, and I'm going to try that.
And then this ran, right? This ran up until you did what? You did something with this.
Until I put in the cam sensor. I backed it out in the yard, and it hasn't started since.
And you've swapped that cam sensor back out, right? You put the other one back in, I'm sure?
No, I haven't. Because it ran when I put it in. Did the same thing it has all along.
Well, just for giggles, you've come this far. Why don't we retrace our steps and put the cam sensor back in it that it ran with? While it's there, the cam sensor pickup, I know you said you scoped it and you had a signal, but the cam sensor pickup, that's a, I believe on the cam sprocket, there should be a magnet. How does that work on this? I'm trying to think.
I think on the cam, it has like a notch taken out of it.
Okay.
And that's what the sensor picks up on.
Okay, so let's look at that. Is that, but you're saying you've had the cover off and the engine's in time.
Yes.
But it's still backfiring out the intake.
Yep.
Well, backfiring out the intake.
It sounds just like the timing. It sounds like a timing chain has jumped.
Right.
Just what it sounds like, but when you disconnect the injectors and the spark, turn it over, it sounds normal.
Right.
You know what an engine sounds like, you know, when the timing is off. It'll turn easy, and then it fetches up, and, you know, that's just what it acts like.
Before you drop the exhaust, go over that cam sensor again. There's something there. Something's throwing this thing out of time. It's how the computer's interpreting it. Put the other cam sensor in it, see what happens.
We'll try it.
All right, call me next week.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Al. Good luck to you. 855-560-9900. We're back right after this. Just take your place in the driver's seat. Driver's seat. Welcome back. back. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor, winding it down this hour. Just another quick hour flew by a car doctor. Loved it. Had a great time. I hope you did, too. I was going to do a Mitchell Real Fix Sure Track Fix of the Week, and actually I could, but I have a real-life story to tell you myself. So Mitchell's Real Fix Sure Track Fix of the Week talks about a Mercedes-Benz, a C300, that wouldn't start because the battery kept falling below required voltage, and it had a drain on it. It was a 2008. The engine didn't start. And the problem with the vehicle turned out to be the seat adjuster switch. The seat adjuster switch, and the customer's complaint was, hey, once in a while the engine won't start. And no start became a no crank. Remember Walt from Hawaii this hour? We were talking to him, and I kept saying, is it a no crank? Is it a no crank, no start, or just a no start? It's always important to explain that to your mechanic. Do you turn the key? Does it click? Do you hear it make any sound? No sound? Do you have dash lights? If you have dash lights, you've got a classic no crank, no start, but dash lights work scenario, and that will tell the mechanic something is up with the vehicle or what's up with the vehicle, at least give them a starting point. In the case of this Mercedes, it turns out that the battery was falling just below minimum voltage, not by much, by 0.2 volts. The onboard computers wouldn't fire up. The car wouldn't start. I had something similar in the shop this week, a 2010 Lincoln MKX that is giving me, well, giving me a hard time because it's going through this intermittent crank, or I'm sorry, no crank, dead battery, and it won't shift out of park when I finally get it to start because the charging system can't keep up with the faulty battery, and it's pulling minimum voltage down below spec, throwing the car into fits. Put a battery in it. We'll see what's going to happen Monday, and we'll diagnose that and talk about that more next week. And until that time, this time like every time, I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, reminding you, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.